Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Religious liberty doesn't just happen. A people or a nation doesn't wake up one morning to find that the freedom to worship or not worship God has sprung up during the night. No, religious liberty is an ongoing process that requires work, dedication, and a certain mindset that accepts cultural differences and even altered perceptions of what worship or God is. Let's talk with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, about some of the issues facing religious freedom today. Lincoln, where would you like us to begin?
Well, I don't know when this is going to be broadcast, but as we're recording this, I'm very conscious in the United States of Memorial Day.
Yes.
And, that's a sobering moment, even though most people perhaps think of it as a vacation and a good day off, and as it was for me, a day with the family and with the children to relax. But I took my son to a Memorial Day parade in a little town near us, and it gave me a moment to think, as I haven't done for a while.
What did you think about? I mean, you've seen these things before. What did you think about?
Well, I don't know about other people, but, you know, we live near Washington, D.C., and you go down Washington, D.C. to big events.
Yes.
There's a lot of people, at the best of times, tourists, and when they have big events, there's the marine bands and lots of things going on. And yes, it's impressive, but it's what you expect in a capital city. It's what you expect in a large center of population. There's a fuss about everything.
Yeah.
But I went to a little town. It was Boonesboro,
yes.
Which for me evokes Boonesboro, Maryland. It evokes memories of Daniel Boone and skin caps and so on.
I've seen it. It's a quaint little town. Beautiful.
Yeah, not much more than a main street.
Yes.
And they had the parade, and my son's middle school band were marching in it. He couldn't because he'd broken his toe.
Mm-hmm.
We got there early, and we got a spot under a tree along the main street, and I thought, this is great. We're ahead of the crowd. Time went by, and 5 minutes to go, and there's nobody near us.
Mm-hmm.
And when the parade started, I doubt there were more than 1,000 people. I mean, even that's being generous in
yes.
the entire town.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few people sprinkled along, and then the parade started, and as they came through, I could reach out and touch them almost. In fact, I was regularly hit by the candy they threw out. and it was so close and personal that in a curious way, to me, it was more meaningful because I realized here's real people
mm-hmm.
in some ways just parading in front of their friends and neighbors, mm-hmm. but for a purpose. And, of course, it started off with the military detachment from World War II, and I am hardly militaristic. I think anyone that's listened to this program
yes.
before knows that I have serious philosophical issues with militarism.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about a sense of national pride and of history and of the values that have sometimes been defended, at least consciously in the minds of those who volunteered for military service, I think it has deep value. And on this Memorial Day, they were parading, of course, with some of the usual hoopla, the bands and the Shriners with their little tiny cars zooming around.
Yes.
But there was an undercurrent of sort of respect for the history that went before and the heritage that we share. And they didn't say anything about it, but as editor of Liberty Magazine, I'm thinking, you know, yes, religious liberty, respect for diversity and the deeply held values that many people brought to a new land, that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And on this Memorial Day, it took on a, maybe it was all in my mind, but the occasion just brought there that this is serious, personal business that we're talking about. It concerns little people in a little town, but big issues.
Yes.
And a lot of people that have gone before us and a lot of sacrifice, a lot of dedication. And we should not take it lightly.
When these people go off to war, do they really have in their mind what they're fighting for? I mean, you have been witness to several wars. You have talked with people who have fought in them. You have talked with people who have chosen not to fight in them. Is there a clear understanding of what people are fighting for in this country?
Well, I don't think so. No, when you really break it down, certainly not. I haven't fought in a war, and the one that I could have was Vietnam.
Yes.
I kept my grades up. But, I remember many of my peers did, and when they came back, I shared what it was about. And I don't think too many people in that war had a great sense of doing it for a patriotic reason. But many of them, after the fact, when they've come back and look more nostalgic on that time, even though that the war may not impress them, being part of a community that stands for something and what the whole edifice means, I think that's impressed itself more and more on people. And there's no question that religious freedom is an integral part of it. Because the First Amendment, that people talk about all the time, is freedom of speech. And it's no accident, I think, that religious freedom goes right together with that. The ability to project your heartfelt viewpoint is very precious. And yes, in a grand overall way, yes, being in the military may have protected that, even though the individual at the time may not have thought so. Just this last week, I was reading in Harper's Magazine comments from the time in London, which was before the US entered the London has endured the Blitz.
Yes.
Night after night from the German Air Force. And the message we've been given is that they just gritted their teeth and bore it. But it was very interesting to read the comments there at the time that many people felt there was no sense hiding, that they'd bomb you anywhere. There was no sense sending their kids to the country as many did, but generally speaking, they didn't think the kids could go anywhere safe. Many of them thought they were all going to die anyway, so let's die together. Mm-hmm. Others felt that, and this was very curious, I'd never picked it up before, that Hitler probably was just after the bosses and the rulers, and that after the bombing is over, that they might even be better off under the new regime.
Really? Wow.
So, yeah, there were mixed views at the time, clearly. Hmm. It wasn't just the uniform defense of God and country and so on, or queen and country in their case. Hmm. But when it's all said and done, when it's over, when people reflect, when they think on the values that they had before the war, in spite of the war, I do believe most rational people think about these deep values like the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, and a great heritage that we have, even though a war itself may not be an exactly clarifying moment.
This is interesting what you're saying. I have some thoughts rolling around in my mind here about soldiers who go off to war, communities who send those soldiers off to war, and then how the soldiers and how the community react as Memorial Day rolls around. They may not really be sure of why they're fighting, but they just have a sense that they should be fighting, that something is not right, that something is coming in and trying to disturb what they have and what they hold dear. They may not be able to put their finger on it. Is there a parallel in our minds as Christians that we should be looking at the world, and when our religious freedoms are somehow under attack, we may not be clearly understanding of what's happening, but we know that something's happening?
You've synthesized what I was leading toward very well. I think things that are maybe not even clearly stated, that when they are threatened in a gray sort of an overway, it forces someone personally to think about them again and revalue them. And that could be the real value of war. That could be the real value of threats to religious liberty. It's then that someone processes why it's important to them. And we well know in the good times in the United States, most people don't think about it.
Yeah.
It's an abstraction only to be expressed in the negative. If you lose what you have, but when you have it, it's just sort of like breathing, isn't it?
Yes, it's just there.
But these moments of military conflict remind people that they live in what they regard and others have accepted as a free environment. I've got to quibble on that a bit because I have told people many times in religious liberty lectures that we need to be careful we don't judge certain absolutes like religious freedom by what others think about it and what, sort of our consensus. Mm-hmm. Because in most environments, in Nazi Germany or in communist Soviet Russia and that, the average person just looking at the others and not having a clear point of reference would tell you they're free. Mm-hmm. Things were fine.
Yeah.
People have a great capacity to be deluded and to compare only to their environment. But, if we look in these moments of crisis, introspectively and then objectively at what's happening, I think the mere fact that there might be a threat has to lead us to reevaluate and to revalue the value of something like religious liberty.
Now, as always happens when I talk to you, Lincoln, my mind is going off in these different directions based on what you said. I want to press you a little bit here. You're saying that you are not militaristic. You don't believe in wars. Are you saying that there are options? There are always options when someone comes and knocks your building down or someone attacks your boats in the harbor? There are options that we should be following?
We're going to move this into a discussion of pacifism.
Yes.
Yes, there are always options. They may not always be good, clear options, but there are always options. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the world, and as a Christian, aware of the Bible and what the New and the Old Testaments say, you know, I believe there's a cosmic battle between good and evil, and evil has to always be evil, even though sometimes it may not appear so clear-cut to human beings. Mm-hmm. And war always leads in the wrong direction, even if it was begun by evil people, and it sucks good people in. By being involved in war, they participate in evil.
Mm.
I read a very good article recently on pacifism, and it gave an argument I can't in detail reiterate, but it gave some very good reasons, even at the beginning of World War II in Europe and with Japan, that the pacifists at the time were urging a line of action that would have been seen by some as cowardice or appeasement, but it pointed out very clearly from the logic of the time that that probably would have saved a good percentage of the 6 to 10 million Jews who were liquidated.
Yeah.
It was not pacifism that killed them, it was militarism.
Interesting.
And in fact, I myself know from the study of the history of World War II that for strategic reasons, Churchill and Roosevelt chose to hide the fact or their knowledge of the genocide from the American public, both because they didn't want them bothered about it, and their logic was that they would create an unworkable situation for Hitler where he would basically choke on the logistics of liquidating these people.
Interesting.
Well, that's very cynical.
Yeah.
And the pacifists who had gotten some inkling of it believed that if they stopped goading Hitler, he wouldn't change his attitude. But he actually, it's very well documented, he upped the pace of the genocide as he became more and more threatened
and
challenged.
Right.
But there was probably no good way out of it. The world was going through a very dangerous period. But we shouldn't rush willy-nilly into militarism because, as we've seen with Iraq, you know, most of us, if time goes on, will not live long enough to see Iraq back to full normalcy. The wounds, even in an ill-advised quixotic, you know, quixotic comes from Don Quixote, tilting at windmills,
yeah.
A quixotic war, you can grant that administration maybe had a high ideal, but it resulted in maybe 100,000 Iraqis dying and destruction of the whole society, fabric of society. So, you know, how do you put that in the moral balance?
Mm-hmm.
Is under a despot before, now a desperate situation and still a fading civil war. You know, where is the good and the bad on that?
Yeah.
You know, it's not given to Liberty Magazine or the religious liberty activists to have definitive views on political action per se. But I do believe that when we're talking about religious liberty, we're talking about accommodation, allowance. Tolerance is not a nice word with religious liberty because it's much more than tolerance, but it includes things like tolerance. And when you think then about war, you recognize that freedom, spiritual expression is not encouraged. It's not invigorated by war.
Yeah.
War is the enemy of all these high values.
Natural disasters or wars leave little in their wake. The first to go are usually people's homes, leaving thousands with no shelter from the hot sun and night dangers. You can partner with ADRA to rebuild houses that have been lost to weapons, winds, and waters. Your generosity provides essential building materials to help families reconstruct what was lost, giving them a degree of safety and stability. This is just one of many opportunities offered to you in this year's edition of the Adventist Development and Relief Agency International's The Original Really Useful Gift Catalog. To find out more, visit www.adra.org. That's www.adra.org. Or call 1-800-424-ADRA. That's 1-800-424-2372. This is your chance to select the perfect gift for that special someone who has nothing. Thank you. We're talking with Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, about Memorial Day today, and we have been sitting with him on the sidelines in Boonesboro watching the parade go by. If there was a Memorial Day attached to the Crusades, and we were on the sidelines and the soldiers were walking by, what would we be remembering of the Crusades? I'm going someplace with this thing.
You gave me the perfect opening, because we had the Memorial Day for the Crusades. It was September 11.
There we go.
I'm speaking for, well, not facetiously,
no,
but
I think
you're really
right.
Rudely.
You're right.
Fanatical, yeah. Inhuman, very misguided individuals behind that cited that directly as their reasoning. Mm-hmm. It was the Crusaders who had planted their flag in Saudi Arabia at the first Gulf War. It was cited in the documents that's why started jihad against the West. Mm-hmm. And again, I believe it underscores my point about war. The Crusades, you know, you can debate them, why they started, whether they should have started, who killed most and all the rest. But it was a messy affair over a couple of hundred years. Mm-hmm. The sad reality is in that part of the world, which is now mostly Muslim, most Muslims remember the Crusades and have a grudge over it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take much to restart the antipathy. A few days ago, I was reading comments from a bunch of young people who spoke to Hillary Clinton when she visited Egypt after Tahrir Square. And an amazing amount of the reported questions, and because it was not all of them, but the article I read, there were probably 50, 60 questions. I would say at least 10, 15% of those questions related to the Crusades.
Really?
And they said an interesting point, which the West should understand. They said, in the Christian West, you have views or assumptions about what Muslims think and suspicions of the Islamic world. They said, you should, this was a young person said it to her, you should understand that most people in the Muslim world have a suspicion of the Christian West. Mm-hmm. Well, that perhaps is built into a very different religious culture, but I think the wars of many hundreds of years ago now, polarized things unnecessarily. And so when we're talking about religion and wars, we have to remember that some of the worst wars have been in the name of religion.
Right, right.
Now, the enemies of religion use that to damn religion. But that's a bigger question, and I think it's in some ways, unnecessarily hard on religion. But given that when there's religion in a war, it's a very vicious war, mm-hmm. we should shy away from those sort of antagonisms, because they linger. They linger much longer than something just over a well or a high ground. And wars from tribal towns have been fought on those things, but that can pass. But a religious slash ethnic division is much harder to get past.
And the take-home message to me as I hear you saying these things is that there is real danger in religious intolerance. There is real danger in a community, even our community, even Boonesboro, when we look at our Islamic brothers and sisters, our cultural differences, when we look at people who are not like us, and these people are so connected to their religion that they don't separate themselves from their religion. When we condemn them, when we attack them, we're also attacking their religion as well. And it sets up reverberations that go on and on and on for generations and for centuries.
Absolutely, absolutely. My. And you're giving me another answer for Liberty Magazine. I was just editing a series of articles that we've been running the last few months on the Christian persecutory impulse.
Yes.
And Christians are not the only ones that are persecuted. Yeah. But it analyzes exactly what you've said, the reverberations through the centuries of intolerance and even a determination to sometimes exterminate all religious opposition. Mm-hmm. Sometimes another religion, sometimes a deviance within a religion. Mm-hmm. In fact, within the religion, it can be a more vicious vendetta because, you know, another religion, they can go somewhere else, or they often exist in another country. But within a religion, it can be to sort of cleanse the religious and political body of this taint, this mm-hmm. doctrinal taint.
Yeah. And we mustn't ever get the idea that it's a country against country. No, it's person against person. This is personal stuff. Religious liberty is personal stuff. Am I right?
Absolutely, because religion is the most personal viewpoint that someone can hold. There, yeah. It's outside the self. It's how the self relates to the cosmos in essence, not just the fellow, because your fellow is in a religious sense, you see them as another. A creature of a creator, but you look to the stars and what's the meaning of everything.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of the you know, like the scientists are looking for the unified field theory to explain everything. That's what religion tries to do. You know, even what religions that I think are false, there's no question that that's what they're aiming at. It's a unified theory of being. And when you are trying to make sense of an entire world or entire universe, and you look across and you see someone that is practicing their view of religion that just doesn't fit within yours, that's a dissonance some people can't bear because they want their world to make sense religiously.
You have made a statement on this program, and I want you to repeat it here, about how most wars, no, I think all wars, how all wars began. You're going to find a religious liberty issue someplace in the run-up to every war that's ever been fought. Am I right?
Certainly every war in our era.
Yes.
You know, I alluded to it a little bit earlier. You might be able to look to some tribesmen out on the grasslands that they're fighting over who will get watering rights or whatever. But in modern society, they're usually... The big wars are usually over a worldview, and a worldview in its transcendent sense is religion.
But, of course, even the tribesmen out there, you can't use my well. You get away from here, I'll kill you. That tribesman's worldview is not a spiritual worldview. That tribesman is not thinking about others. He's thinking about self, and religion usually is about other thought, thinking about others. Am I right?
Well, absolutely, and you pretty much need to invoke religion to see someone as an absolute other.
Yes, yes.
That's why, yes. At its root, the tribal thing was the patriarch and their local regional god that little group held to, and then someone else turns up, and they might physically look like another human being, but basically they're of a foreign substance.
Yeah.
They have a foreign god, and in those regional wars in the Old Testament, which is not just the Old Testament, but in that era, you know, they'd be carrying the wooden effigy of their deity. So you could easily marginalize that person because they were not of you. They were not of your universe. They didn't share your god. And this was a direct threat to everything that you stood for and that your universe stood for.
Yeah. I'm learning here, Lincoln Steed, that really a belief system in a God, or even the belief system of not to have a God, is behind so much of what happens in this world that it is vital for us. It is so important for us to maintain that heart of the Christian, heart of the giving, the unselfish heart, because as soon as we start lifting ourselves up above other people, no good can come from that. Never has, never will.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We don't have much time left, but I want to throw something in. I don't think I've ever mentioned it on this program, and I won't name the individual, but I had a discussion with a fellow church leader at one point who was working in a chaplaincy area. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the Gulf War, as I remember, but the war probably is not important, but it happened to be that one. And I was saying that it's troublesome that in this era, in the United States at least, and I don't know all other armies, Western armies particularly, but in this era, the volunteer army, they don't get Sabbath accommodation or the automatic application for non-combatancy, those sort of things mm-hmm. that relate to religious conviction. And he said, well, they don't need to, he says, because our freedoms come from the military. The military have gained our religious freedoms, so they don't need to have it.
That got your attention.
Yeah, I could not believe that. But, you know, that's turning the world absolutely on its head. You know, I think I've signaled that I'm not inclined to be militaristic. But even if you allow the necessity in a human environment for defense through a state and an army, but that is not right. Religion and true religious freedom doesn't derive from force. It doesn't come from what an army may have either protected or gained for you. It's transcendent. Mm. And as we try to say when we preach about religious liberty to church people, you know, a state can't give it or take it away. Mm. It's something you innately have as a creature of a creator God. He has made you a free individual. Sin has enslaved you, but through the gospel proclamation and what God has done on our behalf, we are free. Mm. And that's ultimately religious freedom. Yes, in a day-to-day human sense, someone can coercively, practically speaking, perhaps restrict your activities in response to religion and your inner held views, but they can't change your view, and nor can they change the reality that is ultimately the freedom.
As I heard you say that, I was thinking, boy, you know, it's too bad we don't have a Memorial Day for God, because he's the one that started the whole freedom movement. But you know what? We do have a Memorial Day for God. Yes. It swings around once a week, am I right?
Seventh day of the week. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy.
There you go. We have a Memorial Day.
And God prefaced it by saying, I am the God that brought you out of captivity in Egypt.
My freedom. Memorial Day, remember it every single solitary week. I like that, Lincoln, very much, that seventh-day Sabbath that God put up for us. Well, we have just 1 minute left on this program. When we bow our heads on that Sabbath day, on that Memorial Day, what should we be thinking in our hearts, Lincoln Steed?
Well, we should be thinking gratefulness, as we do on Memorial Day with our fellow citizens who defended the country. We'd be thinking gratefulness to God for creating us, redeeming us, and ultimately, because it's derivative from the word redemption, saving us and elevating us way beyond the simplistic thinking in this world that often is violent, short-sighted, and not thinking on the transcendent level that God wants.
Well put. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, thank you so much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure.
And listener, I hope that you have learned. I love this program, and I learned so much from it. I hope you have learned a few things today as well. And until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed saying, may you rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.